Good evening. You are listening to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only micro-broadcasting radio station for the arts.
The arts!
I am Nicholas Miller, and this is Steve Cato.
Arts! I love the arts.
It's true. There's another micro-broadcasting station next door for the foods, but not for the arts.
The food station's called what?
K Munch.
Is that the radio station? Someone played me an extra of the show where the guys were trying all the different cat food.
Oh.
And they were like, because they were like, if I'm going to feed this to my cat, I might as well feel like I can eat it. You know, like I should have the confidence in this cat food that I could eat it myself. And so they're like, every week they have like a segment on the show where they try one, you know, brand or flavor of cat food from a brand, and they're just working through.
And are they judging the cat food based on how it finds their palate, or how their palate finds it, or?
Yeah, and okay. how they enjoy it, and they're just like, oh well, you know, like now I know.
Right. Do their tastes align with those of their cat?
I don't think that's even in, I think it's more just that, like, you know, like, if you love your cat, shouldn't you at least, like, know what that's like? Like, when you open, if the cat likes it and you don't, that's one thing. But you know what that's like. You're like, are you like that? You know, it's like the same thing as, like, your friend who doesn't like cilantro or something, you know? And they're like, oh, I don't like cilantro. And you're like, I know that I like cilantro and I know what cilantro's like. You know?
Right.
Like, gives you a basis for common conversation.
Fair enough.
I feel like that's what I think that's what's more at stake for them. It's not my radio show. I only know about talking. I don't know. You know, I have a cat and I buy the cat food and I feed the cat
mm-hmm.
food.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know much about it, really.
You probably practice this. You're talking on the cat, though.
You know, it's. Audience members might be shocked, but it's not my best talking.
Oh, are we talking to the cat?
No. How about when you talk to your cat, how's that?
Pretty good. I've developed a kind of Cockney rhyming scheme for her name. So her name is Chiquita, which sounds a lot like Chiquito,
uh-huh.
which also rhymes with Tangerine Speedo.
So she's called Tangerine Speedo?
Well, Speedo for short.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know,
that's cute.
It's like, I think, like some real Cockney rhyming logic to get there.
Yeah, that is that. Have we done Cockney rhyming slang on the show?
We certainly have. That was a riveting episode. We actually had to strike it from the archive because it was just getting too many hits.
Huh. Well, sorry, folks. meet up with us later.
Yeah, over at the Gary Glitter.
Yeah, along with our deleted Gary Glitter episode.
Anywho.
Yeah, that's cute. I see, like, yeah, all my conversations with my cat are really unambitious.
Yeah.
It's not, like, the good stuff. You know, when people are like, Steve, you must be, like, more, you know, you're so good at talking. Why aren't, I bet you're really good at talking to your cat. And I'm like, no, I just go like, choop, choop, choop. Choop, choop, choop. And then I say, hello, Jeff. And he goes, because he meows silently. And he goes, okay, Jeff. What else, Jeff? And he goes, and then, yeah, it's basically what we talk about. And the other cat, I go, hello, miss. And she goes, like, mm-hmm. And then I say, okay. All right. And she goes, and then like I start playing flute again. And she's like, I hate that. And it goes, and I'm like, all right.
She hates the flute. You
know, I don't know if she hates it or not. I think she like has a strongly held opinions about it. And that's like, and we're just trying to get to the bottom of what those are, you know? Like, she doesn't leave, like, you know, cats, when they don't like something, they'll just go usually.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
Like, they're just like, all right, well, this isn't my thing. I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm.
But she sticks around and she, like, turns her head away and then just goes, like, and then just goes, like, with her head turned away when I stop. And then when I start again, she's, like, silent. And then she goes, like, some more.
Yeah, for some reason, lately, Tangerine Speedo seems to confuse all Zoom calls with me talking to her.
Interesting.
So whenever I'm on a Zoom, she comes running in here and is like, okay, yeah, what do you want to talk about? Not telephone calls, but Zoom calls.
Wow.
So that's another reason to stay off Zoom.
Right, because it confuses the cat.
It really does. It's totally unpleasant. Oh, my goodness.
Well, speaking of having strong opinions.
Yeah, we have some hot, very strong opinions.
Hot takes.
For y'all tonight. We've invited here, live in the studio, fully vaccinated, no more partition walls. We've got two dyed in the...
Droplets everywhere.
Droplets, yeah. Everywhere. Just full aerosol exchange. We're basically all the same organism now. We have two dyed-in-the-wool New Yorkers. Put your hands together. Come to the edge of your seat. For Robert Lipsight and Eric Bogosian.
Going to say the things that nobody ever wants to hear. Things that I can't even repeat right now. But he was very violent. And he was very anti just about everybody.
A beautiful woman, and she's giving me that look, you know? And I'm no single bars stud, but I know what that's all about. I know what that look's about. That look is about seduction. This woman's a seductress, a temptress, a slut, scum, whore, a prostitute, hooker, call them whatever you want. They hook you into a life of VD and pestilence. And behind every one of them, there's a pimp. And those pimps aren't nice guys. Walk up to you in the street, burn your eye out with a cigarette.
I thought, I will bring out this guy that's so negative, and the audience will reject him, but maybe they'll be turned on by him at the same time, and they'll be stuck with the fact that they like somebody that they're not supposed to like.
They'll slice you up, they'll cut you up.
It was a theater of aggression. It was about really involving everybody. I mean, it was kind of like taking a lot of the 60s and early 70s experimental theater ideas and putting them in a punk environment. The only problem was that ultimately it was a one-line joke. I mean, again and again and again I would get on stage, and again I would upset people. And I realized that they just wanted more. I mean, if I had come out on stage, poured gasoline on my head, and lit us a match, they would have been in ecstasy. And I said, I can't take this any further.
Let's go back to Ricky for just a moment. Was he that intellectually created?
Oh, yeah. Oh, did I go through all this thought process? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I was very, very steeped in the conceptual art scene, the performance art scene that was existing at the time in the late 70s in New York and Soho. I'd come out of the theater. I mean, I'd been acting since I was 14, but I'd gotten bored with a lot of what I saw in the theater. So I started hanging around all these artists, and they were doing a lot of talking about what they were doing. There was a lot of theory behind what was going on, and my friends were spending a lot of time talking about why we make what we make. What is the effect we want to get?
Who were some of the artists that are having that kind of effect on you?
Well, Robert Longo, Cindy Sherman, Michael Zwack, Jack Goldstein, David Sally, were all making either work that was very set off, like, I found this, take a look at it.
Well, Longo, for example, those kind of violent...
Yes, or very violent, very confrontational. Saying that when you your role in watching something is as important as the guy who made it.
And Cindy Sherman taking pictures of herself, in a sense, and because is kind of what you were doing, too.
Well, yeah, Cindy and I are very parallel in that... we're looking at what makes a person be who they are. And in my first solos, I was looking at... I had a real problem as an actor saying, this is me, and now I'm going to go play this guy over here. I said, wait a minute, I'm all these people. I have a lot of people inside of me. who are they? And that's how I started making the solos, was just looking at the kinds of people. Nobody's one person, and everybody plays roles in their life. When you go to the doctor's office and you go to see the doctor is playing the role of being a doctor. It's especially hard for me even to sit here right now talking with you, because I don't know what role I'm supposed to be playing. I'm more comfortable when I'm making believe I'm somebody else.
I mean, there's no central core of Eric Bogosian?
I suppose there is, but as soon as I have any feeling of an audience, mm-hmm. I immediately try to run to one character or another.
You always like that?
But yeah, I guess I was when I was younger. I was mm-hmm. probably, yeah, I didn't know who I was for a long time. One day, they handed me some script. They said, this is Shakespeare. It's, you're going to be Juliet's father. And I was home free. I mean, I get to fantasize. I get to be all the people I can't be in real life.
Well, I mean, actors are classically outsiders as kids, or mm-hmm. not comfortable in their own skins.
You need a fantasy life. I mean, your fantasy life was your lifeboat. It was where you went to hide away, or where I went to hide away. But I did it for years and years and years and years and years in front of a mirror in my bedroom. I never thought that it had anything to do with anything anybody would ever want from me. I never thought I'm going to be an actor someday. It was only when it came up in school that I found out, you call this acting, people like to watch it, and I'm good at it.
Something that I thought about is that there's a certain comfort. You give the audience a certain comfort in the fact that almost all of these characters are either so despicable or so irredeemable or such hustlers that we don't ultimately have to care about them. We don't have to give the panhandler a buck. We don't have to see the humanity in Joe Sixpack. You know, none of them really require our responsibility.
Well, they're only characters. Where I come from is that I'm not saying this is reality. I'm saying this is a representation. And I think it does do a lot to people. It stirs up the way they look at these people. And then they leave the theater, and it will change the way they come across somebody similar to somebody I'm playing on stage. I think of it sort of as there are a lot of disturbing things out there. We don't really know what to do with them. Just like when the cavemen made cave paintings, they were scared of the bear, they painted the bear, and they threw stones at him. Well, my audience is essentially here watching the things that scare them outside, because they have the rest of the audience to sit with them, and they know I'm not going to come off the stage and bite them. They can deal with it and think about it and touch it and be there for a little while. There's an element of a thrill to that, but I think there's a humane element as well. I care, otherwise I wouldn't play the guys. I'm confused. If I see a man on the street and he's in rags and he's obviously out of it on a drug or alcohol or something, I don't know what to do.
Could you help a guy up for a second here? I just slipped and fell down. I was running the marathon here, buddy, and I fell down for a second.
Should I pick him up? Shouldn't I pick him up? He looks like he's been there for a while. Nobody else is picking up. I don't know.
I know you can hear me, buddy. Don't act like you can't hear me. How about it, huh? What, you think you're better than me or something?
What bothers me is my reaction. I mean, beyond even the horrible state the guy is in, I'm not sure what to do. If it was my brother or sister there, I would jump right down and pick him up. It's not my brother or sister, so I don't know what to do. And I think a lot of people feel that way.
What are you going to do? Go home and have a nice little dinner now with the wife and the kids and the dog and the gerbil? Huh? Nice little roast beef dinner there, huh? With some asparagus tips, huh? Gonna have some asparagus tips tonight, buddy, are you, huh? Oh, asparagus tips tonight, that's why you can't pick me up, huh? Huh? You're all the same, you know that? You're a bump. You're a bunch of bumps.
I'm looking at a lot of behavior in the shows that are in gray areas of morality, and there's a lot like that now, because the moral fiber of our country is very loose and ragged at this point.
I'd like to say one more thing about drugs, if I may. I know we're running out of time here, but
You know, so many of the kids, there's so many kids watching right now, and I know that they take what we have to say very seriously. They buy the albums, they read the lyrics, they memorize them, they live their lives by them. And I'd just like to say this. I've done a lot of drugs. I've had a lot of good times on drugs. I've learned a lot from drugs. Some of my best music has been inspired by drugs. In fact, I think it's safe to say I've had some of the best times of my life on drugs. But it doesn't mean you have to use them.
Tell me about him. What we've seen is a hypocrite.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying. He doesn't see. He's so full of himself, and he's so quick to pat himself on the back. What a wonderful guy he is. He doesn't see any problems in the way he looks at the world. And I think the question for the audience, I mean, it's a funny bit, so they're spending most of the time laughing. But I think that ultimately the audience has to say, what is wrong with this picture? What would I do different if I were him? What would you do? If you have a guy who's making millions of dollars a year as a rock star, who's cleaned himself off of drugs, and has now decided to help out the Amazonian Indians, I mean, what's wrong with that? Is that such a bad thing? I like dealing with gray areas, and I think that we are very prone to looking at things black or white. There's good guys, there's bad guys. I'm a good guy, always. Everybody's a good guy. So therefore, they're the bad guys. That absolves me of any responsibility. Well, it's a cop-out as far as I'm concerned, because it's so easy to just sit around and get off on placing blame, looking at other people, and never really looking at the complexities. My show is filled with a lot of negative people, but I think that there is a little bit of each of us in these characters. Perhaps you didn't see that, but I see myself in these people. I see people who are greedy and self-centered. I see people that are self-pitying. I see people that are egotistical, and I see people that are aggressive. And to some degree, everybody's like that. I mean, they've got to be. Because when I drive out in the traffic in New York City, 75% of the people out there act like lunatics behind the wheel. Everybody turns into a different person. Everybody is capable in this city of walking down the street and walking right past somebody who is hurting and hurting bad.
Ricky, when you were doing Ricky Paul, you had nothing to lose.
Yes.
And now, Frank Rich of the New York Times says that you're a culture hero, that you are Lenny Bruce, Woody Allen, and Bob Dylan of the 90s. Now you've got something to lose. How does that affect the performance, the thought process, the writing?
Well, unfortunately, I've learned, and I've learned the hard way, that the safest route for me is to always do the thing that I like the most. In fact, a week before we began previews, my wife and I, Joanne, who directed the show, we said, boy, this is a really black show. This is a very dark show. What are we going to do? I mean, people aren't going to really like this. Maybe we should throw in a few funnier bits or lighter bits, which I'm fully capable of doing. And then we said, no, this is the show we like. This is the show we'll put on. You know, it's wonderful that the critics have responded the way they have. And I don't look a gift horse in the mouth. As far as losing things, and certainly comparing me to anybody like some of the big stars you've mentioned, I mean, I'm honestly not one of them. And it's nice that people might think I'm in their company. It's very flattering. The mass media today is not the mass media it was in the early 60s. Or the late 60s, when a folk singer or a comic with something to say could get onto the air or on a record and distribute ideas to millions of people. It's just not that today. The mass media is not looking for segments out there. They're not saying, boy, this is great, a million people like this show. They'd say, this is terrible. We need 50 million people to like this show, otherwise it's a failure. Everything is compared against an absolute of Michael Jackson or Eddie Murphy. And unfortunately for those artists, they are playing to a very, very, very wide audience, and there's no room in there for anything idiosyncratic or special to be said. They're going to have to find a lowest common denominator, or just a common denominator. My stuff is special. I know it is. I'm not saying everybody should like it. I think of it as like sushi. I mean, I love sushi, but not everybody loves sushi. It's special. A guy like Lenny Bruce could find his niche with some Fantasy records that went out there at that time, the label Fantasy. They went out and they found their niche. But how many records actually got sold? I mean, today they'd be considered a tremendous failure and he would be gone. There's no room for mistakes. You can't just put any show up you want or find a niche audience. It's just not possible. College students in the late 60s were very avid for every new thing. Today they're not. If somebody's going to book a show and they want a younger audience, they have to book the thing that is, you know, top of the charts or has been appeared on Saturday Night Live.
Would you think you can crack through as the
iconoclast? I don't care. I don't think it's important. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's really an issue. My work is what it is, and the people who come to the theater come and see it and enjoy it. In 50 years, I'll be in a box, and it'll all be forgotten. It's not that important.
There is videotape.
Yes, but that's just a document of a live show. Mm-hmm. I have to be honest. I am very partial to theater. Experiences, shows that I've seen in the theater, I remember my whole life. A good show I've seen, I never forget. I mean, it's just that special. Films, they come, they go. TV shows, I mean, I'm sure there were many TV shows I've really enjoyed. I can't remember any of them. I can't remember them specifically. When people come in this theater and the evening works, I think it's a part of everybody's life when they leave here.
Mm-hmm. And what have they left with? I mean, because it's clear, no matter what you say, that you're a moralist.
Oh, yeah. I'm a moralist. I think it's important to understand that. I have very conservative elements in me, and these come head to head. I mean, my Armenian nationality background, Armenians are traditionally conservative, family-oriented people with very traditional values. But I grew up in the late 60s, and in the 60s were a time of expanding every horizon and every, being very, breaking down barriers to changing the way we look at our life. So I'm these two people. I'm classic American grown up in the 60s, and I'm a classic Armenian American, and the two things come together, and I've got a clash of values in my life. I am a moralist, but I don't believe that. I mean, I think you get too moralistic and you end up with a kind of conservative jingoism that's part of what we think of as a lot of the evangelist money-making priests and the right-wing NRA guys and all those kind of guys who I don't like. I don't identify with them.
Well, let me tell you something, friends. We do not live in the Garden of Eden. We live right here on Earth. And some will suffer while others prosper, as it says in the Bible.
I'm shocked at what I see around me in the world, and I respond. And the only way I know how to make work about this is rather to point a finger and say, that's wrong. Say, I'm confused about this. I feel two feelings at the same time. I'm attracted by it, and yet I know it's bad. And I think that it isn't a bad idea to try to understand a little bit, rather than constantly be condemning people. It's just too easy, it's decadent, to spend all our time condemning all the bad people in the world and act as if we are faultless.
Why? Why does everybody have a microwave oven? Because the TV set told them to buy it. They're making a computer, man. Biggest computer they ever made, okay, in the whole history of the world. The government's building it for billions and billions of dollars. And I'll tell you something, man. They finish that computer, we're all gonna be dead. Because they're gonna take that computer and they're gonna hook it up to all the TV sets. And they're gonna reverse the TV set so they can see us in our house doing our thing. And if the computer doesn't like what it's seeing, it's gonna send a message to the TV set. The TV set's gonna send a message to the microwave oven. The door's gonna pop open, and you're gonna be ashes, man.
I don't expect any conclusions, and I also don't think I'm any smarter than anybody out there in terms of, I've got the answer, you don't, let me tell you what the answer is. I mean, nothing I hate worse than is to walk into a theater and have somebody patronize me by telling me something like, you know, the theme is no nukes. Nukes are bad. I knew that before I walked in that theater. I don't need you to tell me nukes are bad. Tell me something I didn't know. Tell me nukes are good. That's at least more interesting. Then I can walk out of the theater and think about it, you know? Did you ever think about that, that nukes might be good? If we nuke the whole world, all these animals that are going extinct in the world would be able to come back to life and live. So maybe we should have nuclear war. That could be a new bit.
Eric Bogosian, thanks very much.
Thank you.
New York's all right if you like saxophones, right, guys?
Yeah. Well, it's good to have Eric on the show. I don't think we've had an Armenian guest yet, and it's rather timely given our current president's recognition of the Armenian genocide.
That's true. Although, is it true that we have not had an Armenian on before? How's that possible? We were in Los Angeles.
It's true, but we often draw talent from elsewhere, and I know that LA is a hotbed for Armenian immigration. But we don't always have locals on the show.
Oh, that's true. Huh.
Well, who's that fellow that you went to CalArts with who plays in a band? Showed at Fiona Connor's Art Space.
Oh, yeah. Bedros Yatsarian.
Was he on the show? I don't think he's been on the show.
Bedros, if you're listening, buddy, get on here.
Yeah, get on here. Yeah, join the ranks.
Eric Bogosian's making what I think is a Armenian gang hand gesture.
Yeah.
Hand sign.
Yeah.
He's saying, and nodding his head. He's like, get in here.
And despite what you'd imagine, he's slamming a whole cup full of asparagus tips and hollandaise.
he's got a like just sort of like some sandwich paper, but it's just full of roast beef.
Yeah, roast beef, asparagus tips. Art and life aren't always the same thing, as we've learned time and time again here on the Talking Show.
No.
But I will say
he does like that, buddy. That's what he's saying.
Yeah,
buddy. Do you like that? He's like, I like that.
Yeah, I will say it was rather refreshing to encounter a practice whose main thrust seemed to be the critique of bourgeois life, which is definitely not a high note in contemporary culture in LA at the moment. I feel like since the Pictures Generation, it's taken a turn away from that kind of criticism.
I mean, you know, good for the Pictures Generation. They're the highest selling photographers in the world. That critique has really paid off, is what we can determine, you know?
Yeah, true.
Really, really, really critical. Everyone's taking that all their offense to the bank and cashing it in for fine, fine money.
Yeah, there have been enough of those hard-edged conceptual practices that get turned into Maseratis, like our friend Waleed Beshti here in town.
Exactly. And I think Bogosian rolled up in, what do we call it? What kind of car? That's not a Bentley. That's a Jag, right, Eric?
It's a Jag. It's a Jag Bentley as a collaboration.
Gently.
Gently. replete with asparagus tips, and then he took one of those those kind of like military prototypes where it looks like you have like Mega Man arms and you can kind of float up. He floated up to the third floor here from the street level with the Mega Man arms.
That's so cool.
Yeah, anti-gravity ray guns or whatever they're called.
And it's important that you don't distract someone when they're doing that, because then they point at if you go like, hey, what's that? And they point at it, and then off they go. You know, like if they lift up their arm to point in that direction, they're just like flying away. So you want to stop doing it. You don't want to be like, what's that over there? And then point, and then have them try and point at it too. You know.
No, it's a risky business. I recently got lost in a Instagram account of a company that makes those called Gravitas or something like that. And wow. They were, they're showing they had their best operator on the job, obviously, because they're trying to sell this product. And he was it doesn't seem like the accuracy is quite there, because the things that he was doing that were supposed to be technically stunning, you're like, oh, okay. So he went from that circle over to that other 10-foot circle and landed inside of it. You're like, I think you guys are going to have to make this a little more wieldy before we're using it to scale buildings or whatnot.
I mean, Eric seems to have done okay.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a method actor of sorts.
Right, so he was just like, now I am a fighter pilot.
Yeah, exactly. Or he just trained. He threw himself headlong into it.
Right, and yeah, it's true. Then there's no way out. It's just like,
and, you know, there's something to be said for just pure aggression. I mean, clearly he's practiced in that. I think that can translate into these feats of strength quite easily.
Right. Yeah. And I hear that, like, when Jeremy Irons does, like, method acting, sometimes he can, like, actually, like, melt steel beams and stuff.
Huh. Well, I wonder so how did he prepare for Dead Ringers? Like, he just worked as a gynecologist?
He split himself in half.
And he worked at a gynecologist in Toronto?
Yeah, he became two gynecologists.
Wow, that must have been interesting.
And then he put up the craziest part from the maybe we'll have him on to talk about it sometime, but he definitely, like, put himself back together again. That's the crazy part.
Yeah. I hope that went well.
I think it was really hard.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, congratulations. Tough job.
Very tough. We do have a bit of bad news for Eric. It turns out that they did build that big computer. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
But the good news is that by the time they built the big computer, no one really had a microwave anymore.
Right. Yeah.
So
there we go.
Leave it to the American government to try to exterminate its population, but do it inefficiently.
Yeah.
Effectively.
Well, you know, one day we'll get these COVID vaccines distributed to everyone, right? One day we'll, we were just the most powerful nation on Earth, you know.
Really? I feel like they're giving up, right?
I mean, you'd
didn't
like
they
to
close? I read that they closed the Dodger site from lack of interest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of these days.
Yeah. The false input in our model was that people would want to get it. Damn, I knew we didn't think of something.
There's one thing I forgot, and it's
that the last president was telling everyone not to get it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, one final disclaimer before we let Eric find out on his own that the Pacific Dining Car is closed. Is that the talking show does not endorse the slogan that nukes are good. Nukes are definitely bad.
Yeah.
And if they're set off, I don't think that the species that we are currently murdering through our horrible lifestyles here on Earth, I don't think they're going to make it through there. It'll just be like Twinkies, right?
Wait, what do you mean?
Oh, I think this is a Simpsons episode where they set off, you know, Homer sets off the nuclear power plant and the only foodstuff that survives are Twinkies.
Oh, yeah. No, won't it be those tubs? You know, those survivalists always have these like vats of like freeze dried chimichanga.
Oh, gosh.
Right. Like that's like that. Have you seen these videos on the Internet?
No.
There's like, all right, it'll be like Jim Jones or something, you know, like one of these like charismatic like Christian ministers or something like that. And he'll have this like, he'll be like, all right, I want to tell you all back home about this great product for the end times. It's a child sized vat and it's just full of like the food you like to eat. And it's like, and it's just like, yeah, like a chimichanga. A blob, like blobs of chimichanga goo. And you just like, I don't know, shovel it out. It's fucked up looking. It looks insane. I used to go to this store called SOS in the Valley that would sell me survivalist parts when I was like interested in just eating a specific, exact specific amount of calories every day as a project. And, you know, I mean, whatever, you're in art school. What are you going to do? You know, you're going to try new things. And, that was the kind of place that would sell you that, you know, that would be in the catalog. It would just be like a giant tub of dried beans.
Wow. And the guy behind the counter is like, get this one. Don't get the huevos rancheros.
Yeah. Don't get the huevos rancheros. This one's that one, you know, it's like, well, you know, yeah, all right, here's the thing. Our competitors at K-Munch, if you are done with all, I don't imagine when this is actually going to happen, but if you do finish all the cat food mysteriously, if you are like me and Nicholas and it's 10 years on and you've jetpacked Eric Bogosian over because, you know, you've been doing talking for so long that, you know, you've reached this level where you're like, we need to get people from New York. We're full. We've done everyone on the West Coast. You know, if you, like us, have a long-running concern and you're out of cat food to eat on your radio show, you can now start eating survivalist rations on the radio show and rate those.
Yep. Well, I mean, it perhaps we can end it on that note that the main reason to not launch nuclear weapons en masse is that it will potentially wipe out talking.
You know, and restaurants.
Yep. Well, we've already done that. So.
Foodie culture. You know, it's like, where are you going to get fun snacks? Nowhere.
Yeah. So there'll be no need for the talking show, K-Chung, or K-Munch, which is not a world worth living in.
No. Absolutely not.
So until next time, good listeners, good morning.
Smash like and subscribe. I'm trying something new, okay, Nicholas? Good night, everyone.